On the program today, China, and then some more China, from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday, today the 28th day of February. Good as always to have you along, everybody. This is a day of rare agreement in Washington, D.C. Agreement in particular about the strategic dilemma that is the Sino-American relationship right now. Political agreement, mostly. Military and national security agreement as well. Economic agreement, too. There are two committee hearings on Capitol Hill today in which China is agenda item number one. One of those hearings in prime time, actually, for easier television viewing. The Biden administration and Congress are working on, among other things, economic tools the United States might use in its relationship with Beijing right now. Trade is on that list. Tariffs, of course. Other measures as well. Also, American investment over there. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer gets us going.
For years, China was a free-for-all for U.S. companies and investors. If you wanted to buy stock in a Chinese firm that makes technology used by China's military, no problem. Sam Sachs, a Yale Law School senior fellow studying China tech policy, says there's a long history of
types of international commerce involving these kinds of defense industry companies and their subsidiaries that would probably make the national security community's head spin.
The head spinning prompted the Trump administration to issue a list of Chinese companies that were off limits for U.S. investors. The thinking is you don't want U.S. money going to companies that could turn around and use it to benefit China's military. President Biden has expanded that list to 59 entities, but Sachs says the list only focuses on investments in those companies' stock.
It wouldn't cover a joint venture or a partnership with those companies.
Although U.S. export controls could prohibit that, and that's an approach favored by Weifeng Zheng, a senior research fellow at George Mason University. He says limits on exports to China are more effective than investment bans. Just last fall, the Biden administration announced new restrictions on the sale of U.S. chip technology to China.
I don't think money is what's lacking with Chinese companies. The Chinese government could easily invest a lot of money into these key sectors.
Even so, the Biden administration is under a lot of pressure from China hawks to beef up its investment restrictions. Scott Paul is head of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. He wants the White House to set up a government review board to decide if a foreign investment would be a threat to U.S. national security.
A potential investment would need to be disclosed, and a determination would be made about whether or not the investment would pose a concern.
It's a tricky balance, though. The administration is trying to limit investment in China on national security grounds without overdoing it and affecting the competitiveness of U.S. companies. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, February ends on a down note. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The news from the conference board today was not great. It's a business research group, by the way, the conference board is perhaps best known for its monthly index of consumer confidence. And confident we consumers are not right now. Down was the headline index for the second month in a row. We're especially not confident when asked what we think things are going to be like 6 months from now. But 6 months from now is 6 months from now, and today is today. And American consumers are going out with a capital O-U-T. Sales at bars and restaurants were up something like 7% January from December, up about 25% from January a year ago. That is according to the most recent report on retail sales. What do you suppose that might tell us? Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes is keeping tabs on bar and restaurant tabs.
These days, Dale Cook is eating lunch out on a daily basis. I met him just outside Cooper's Tavern in Baltimore, where he'd had the crab soup, a burger, and a business meeting.
I had a manager tell me a long, long time ago when I first got in the business, when you're paying for someone's lunch, it's a whole lot harder for them to say no.
A lot of people are paying for meals out these days. What at one point was logistically or financially out of reach now seems like a priority for many Americans. Inside, the restaurant's bustling. 24-year-old server Lyneth Rivera pours iced tea and soda and is dreaming of an even busier season ahead.
I'm hoping that it's super busy that I can't even think.
Rivera's a mom and a part-time nursing student, so says she only goes out once a month.
But on that day, I will go all out, so, and then spend just as much as I would spend once a week.
That kind of pent-up demand is part of what's driving this increased spending at bars and restaurants, says Bank of America economist Aditya Bhave.
Right? If you, before the pandemic, were eating out twice a week and then you never got to eat out during the pandemic, you could go through a period where you eat out three times a week.
Andy says the question is whether this is a short-term celebratory period or if it's a new way of spending. Back outside Cooper's Tavern in Baltimore, customer Andrew Ross says he feels obligated to spend in this way after seeing restaurants close during the pandemic.
And it was really sad, all these like local businesses just going away. And so now it feels more incumbent on us to kind of use them since they're available.
He says it's important to maintain social spaces in his community. They're worth the price of a burger and some crab soup. In Baltimore, I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
If you were paying attention to the ads during the Super Bowl, or maybe not paying close enough attention as the case may be, you almost certainly experienced, and I use that word intentionally, the ad for Tubi, the one that quite possibly tricked you into thinking you had the Tubi app open instead of being watching the game. Well, viral ads aside, in the oh-so-crowded world of streaming and on-demand, Tubi recently hit 64 million users, up from about 25 million in 2020. Farhad Masoodi is the CEO and founder of Tubi. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
I will say it's the first time in 3 years I've had a guest in the studio, so it's a little bizarre.
Just, oh, wow. I feel special.
And you are. And you are. The Super Bowl ad. I talked about it in the introduction. How did that come to pass? Because you had everybody, including me, going, wait, am I really still watching the game?
Well, the beauty of being a CEO is that you have amazing people to work for you and to get the credit for it. And I think the thesis was to stand out, to do something that as special as different. I think it worked out okay.
I think it did, too. I think it did, too. It got some buzz. There are going to be people who have who are going to hear this interview and will not know what Tubi is. So in a nutshell, what is it that you guys do?
Well, so on one hand, we're a free streaming service. Think of Netflix, but ad-supported. And on the other hand, we have the largest collection of TV shows and movies. And we use machine learning to figure out what subset is interesting to you.
And business is, based on everything I've read, going great guns for you.
It's been an incredible few years for us, yes.
So let's timestamp that. Since 2020 and the Fox purchase, where they bought you for something like $400 million, you guys have seen really incredible growth.
We have indeed. In fact, we had pretty good growth prior to the acquisition, too. But in the past 3 years, it's been a rocket ship.
What's the secret to the success, do you think?
Well, there are two things that Tubi does that's different. One, we talked about, it's free and accessible.
Mm-hmm. Ads. I mean, you know, it's not free, but
correct.
It's...
Correct. Yeah. Ads. Okay. Just like your podcast.
Ouch, but okay.
Hey, I'm a fan.
No, that's all right.
And second is, you know, is built on our philosophy that monoculture is dead. What that means is media consumption is getting more and more fragmented.
Yeah.
I think that's better for our society, and I think it serves consumers best. And so we have audiences that love black cinema. Some love horror movies. Some want to watch anime. And I think that's the way of the future.
Let's talk actually about black cinema and black viewers for you, because you have become the place for black independent filmmakers to go to get their stuff to an outlet.
I'm very proud of that.
I was just going to say, conscious decision?
No, actually.
Really?
Just we just looked at the data. We realized that these consumers are just looking for that content. And we found many of those. Black cinema is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I feel very proud that we have been able to serve that community, and we continue to even make originals these days for Black cinema fans.
Let's talk about the other part of what it is that you do that you say is different. It's ad-supported or free, to use yours. But I guess my question is, there are people out there, there are companies out there way bigger than you are, Disney, Netflix, that are also going the ad-supported route. What degree of worry do you have about them and your prospects?
Well, I should never underestimate these incredible companies, but there is a big difference between a company that's charging even a penny a month and subsidizing with ads, as opposed to a service that's completely free. And that makes us more like a company like Instagram and TikTok. It's built on data and machine learning, which, by the way, when you make it free, you get a lot more data points. So you learn how to
program.
Because
people more eagerly opt in.
Correct. And I think if we keep the ad load minimal, we can keep audiences engaged.
You're not even 10 years old yet. Lachlan Murdoch, I read the other day, turned down $2 billion for Tubi. What was your reaction to that?
Well, I can't comment on the on the rumors of acquisition. I think that, look, Tubi is my baby. I built it. Yeah. In fact, the company started 12 years ago, but we launched the business about 7 years ago. So I feel blessed.
You're going to stick around?
I will see.
Oh, that was a non-denial denial.
We'll see. I mean, I think that I am having a lot of fun, but I also, you know, at some point I will probably do another companies and businesses. So we'll see what happens.
Farhad Masoodi, he's the founder, also now the CEO still of Tubi. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
2023 so far has not been kind to the high-end sneaker market. Adidas came out with a profit warning earlier this month, saying that the demise of its relationship with Ye, known once upon a time as Kanye West, due to his anti-Semitism, is going to put a big dent in its bottom line. Analysts figure the company is still sitting on as much as $500 million worth of now unmarketable Yeezy merchandise. Item two is the sneaker resale market. According to data from the research firm Alton Insights, for sneaker resellers, average prices were down 7% last year. So with all that turbulence on the macro sneaker level, we got Vanita Cooper back on the phone from Silhouette Sneakers and Arts in the Greenwood District of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Business right now at Silhouette is doing well, according to our revenue numbers. We are currently doing 37% better in terms of revenue compared to last year. So it's exciting. It's exciting to see that. Right now, you know, the sneaker market is down. You know, Nike, New Balance, like all the major brands, they recognize that people are not going to be as spendy in the first quarter. And so in terms of really desirable releases of sneakers, it's just slower. And so a big challenge is just trying to like keep engagement when, you know, we're not seeing just a constant flow of really hyped sneakers. I knew that this was going to be a challenging year. So, you know, even though you know, I'm seeing positive signs in terms of revenue, I think it's just because of some aggressive kind of like tactics and trying to make sure that we're keeping traction, gaining traction. We've been open for a little over 3 years, and I actually have not taken Silhouette to a sneaker trade show. And so yesterday I went to, you know, my first trade show as a vendor and did a really nice number of sales. But also just like got the brand out. In the next 3 to 4 months, I would love to continue to build on, you know, some of the wins, some of the progress that we've made in terms of, you know, building up our customer base. maybe stepping outside of Tulsa a little bit more, going to trade shows. You know, the trade show yesterday was not, it's not the last. It's just the beginning. And finally, the star of the show, of course, is Pancake, our miniature dachshund employee. Pancake is now here 2 days a week instead of one. And, you know, it's just anecdotal, but definitely had some customers say, hey, you know, I bought this because of Pancake. So I definitely think he's having a positive impact on business here as well.
Vanita Cooper and Pancake at Silhouette Sneakers and Art in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Coming up.
So you two, whoever it is, the parties, you need to figure it out. I shouldn't be in the middle of this.
Sounds like somebody needs a timeout, huh? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials off 232 points today, 0.7%, 32,656. The NASDAQ dropped 11 points, about a 0.1%, 11,455. The S&P 500 dropped 12 points, 0.3%, 39.70. Compared to a year ago, home prices across the nation were up 5.8%. That's according to the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller National Home Price Index. You try saying that 10 times fast. It's a pretty hefty step down from November's 7.6% year-on-year gain. Target reported today that, hey, look, sales actually increased in the fourth quarter by about 0.7%. Best guesses had been about a decline of 1.5%. Retailer beat profit expectations, too, but warned that the coming year might get bumpy. Target aimed 1% higher by the bell. Today, you are listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Nancy Marshall-Genzer started us off with China at the top of the program, American investment there, and what the future might hold given the current challenging state of that bilateral relationship. Tech is front and center among those challenges, specifically social network tech, and most particularly TikTok, which is owned by a Beijing-based company called ByteDance. Federal agencies, the White House said this week, have 30 days to get TikTok off all government phones, tablets, and computers, 90 days to tell the contractors they work with that they can't use TikTok either. And Congress is talking today, in fact, about giving President Biden the authority to ban the app from the United States altogether. Canada and the European Union are of similar minds. So, Marketplace's Samantha Fields reminds us what this is all about.
TikTok, like most social media apps, collects tons of data about its users.
Geolocation, face or voice prints. It can identify who TikTok users contact, what they say, where they are at a given time.
Caitlin Chin at the Center for Strategic and International Studies says the issue with TikTok in particular is its connection to China.
The fear is that the Chinese government can potentially access this information.
How real that security risk is still kind of an unknown, says Jessica Malugin at the Center for Technology and Innovation at the Competitive Enterprise Institute.
The U.S. users who enjoy TikTok think, who cares if the Chinese government knows what dance I'm doing? But if you talk to some national security experts, they'll tell you the way to think about it is having 100 million little cameras that could be accessed by the Communist Party running around America.
And she says when you're talking about government employees carrying those little cameras,
they might be providing data of where military personnel are, the location data, or there might be images of things that the U.S. military would rather not have the Chinese government see.
TikTok, through its head of public policy for the Americas, Michael Beckerman, says those concerns are unfounded.
Not based on facts or evidence, purely political posturing. If Congress has concerns about TikTok, the best thing they can do is ask the administration to wrap up their national security review,
which President Biden ordered well over a year ago. Juliet Kayyem at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government says there is a symbolic aspect to the TikTok ban.
That is undeniably what's animating it, because most technologists will say, we have so much crap on our phones. A foreign intelligence agency, if it's smart, will be able to figure out what it wants to get from us,
whether or not we have TikTok installed. At the same time,
Why create an easy vulnerability for the Chinese? Let's just make it a little bit harder for them.
And really, she says, how many government employees need TikTok on their work phone anyway? I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
In the waning days of 2020, President Trump signed a bill that was officially called the Consolidated Appropriations Act 2021. In it was $900 billion in pandemic relief and just shy of $1.5 trillion to fund regular government functions through the rest of that fiscal year. Also, though, tucked deep inside, I mean, the thing runs 2,126 pages, was a provision called the No Surprises Act, meant to eliminate, as you might have guessed, surprise medical bills. That part of the overall law went into effect a little bit more than a year ago, and although you shouldn't be getting hit with big unexpected healthcare bills anymore, that doesn't mean you aren't. From WPLN in Nashville, Blake Farmer reports.
When Blake Richard of Fort Worth, Texas, opened the bills for his newborn's hospital care, he was especially surprised because he learned surprise medical bills had supposedly gone bye-bye. But he and his partner had nearly $2,000 in physician charges.
And we were like, whoa, like, where did this come from? Like, I thought we had insurance. Like, is there an issue?
It turned out the physicians who treated their newborn were out of network, and they were billed for the remainder of what their insurance wouldn't pay. Richard spent months writing letters and pushing back, pointing to the new law, and the physician group backed off.
As a patient in the middle of the situation, my thought process is like, I don't care who's responsible for what. What I do know is like, what's happening to me shouldn't be happening, it's not fair. So you two, whoever it is, the parties, you need to figure it out. I shouldn't be in the middle of this.
While there may still be some people getting these out-of-network bills inappropriately, the law says health plans and providers are supposed to be working out their disputes in a new arbitration process.
I mean, we want patients out in the middle of this.
Patrick Velicky runs government affairs for Envision Healthcare, which is one of the biggest emergency medicine companies in the country. According to new data from the federal government, emergency physician groups are among the biggest users of this new resolution process. It was set up to resolve billing disputes between hospitals or doctor groups and health plans. In a report, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services said they did not expect so many bills in arbitration, more than 90,000 in 6 months, creating a giant backlog. So many bills have been disputed that companies like Envision are being accused of spamming the system to break it. Velicky calls that nonsense.
Believe me, we are not helped by submitting claims that are ineligible. There's nothing to be gained by us flooding the system. Alternatively, there's lots to be gained by the payers.
Payers as in health plans. Velicky says some are demanding lower rates from doctors and canceling contracts, since now there is so little to be gained by being out of network. Adam Beck is a vice president of the trade group America's Health Insurance Plans, known as AHIP. He says he's not surprised by the grousing from physician groups and health systems.
That's really what the No Surprises Act set out to do, and it leveled the playing field in a way that, admittedly, I think some providers may find uncomfortable.
But there are concerns that the new law will not drive down costs like it was meant to. The arbitration is itself an expense. The federal government has increased the fee this year from $50 to $350. Patricia Kelmar, who directs healthcare campaigns for the Public Interest Research Group, or PIRG, says patients will end up absorbing this cost one way or the other.
That just means our premiums are going to go up. So you may not see it dollar for dollar, and you may not know why, but it is part of the driving costs. We know that hospital prices are going up, and then our insurers have to pass it on to us.
Kelmar says the ban on surprise medical bills was a big disruption that should be good for consumers, but only if the government works out the kinks in the new system. In Nashville, I'm Blake Farmer for Marketplace.
The This final note on the way out today comes to us courtesy of Neil Irwin, frequent guest on this program, the chief economic correspondent at Axios. His newsletter today was about inflation, not here, but in Europe. France announced yesterday inflation there is running at 7.2% year on year. That's the highest inflation's been in France since the euro became a thing 20 years ago. Inflation for the whole eurozone comes out on Thursday, and I mention it because, to repeat myself, inflation is a global phenomenon right now. It's not just us. All right, we got to go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context. Personnel Department supplied us with this one. President Biden said today he's going to nominate Julie Sue to be the new Secretary of Labor. She is currently the Deputy Secretary. The soon-to-be former guy, Marty Walsh, leaves next month to run the National Hockey League Players Association. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Dylan Mietten, and Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Ellen Rolfes, Virginia K. Smith, and Tony Wagner. Francesca Levy is the Executive Director of Digital and On-Demand. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.